Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. It's working.
Okay.
What a scary thought. Well, this is an interview with Clark Bond by Roger Roland on August 25, 2017, and Clark and I were earlier talking about what was happening at Petersburg before we went up to the new Sheridan Union High School. So, as you said before we turned on the tape recorder, at the end of your, I guess your 10th grade year, you didn't know where you were going. When did you find out that you were going to be going to the new high school?
You know, as I recall, it was sometime during that school year. We were aware that there was a school that was being contemplated, and we didn't know how far along it was in the construction process. So, you know, it was probably later in the school year when I suddenly realized that that was going to be a reality, because I was a little concerned, as you can imagine, as to where I would be going, or was, as you suggested earlier, was I going to spend another year at Petersburg School. So that would have been probably early in 1952.
Okay. I know, I've heard, I went to the alumni all-class picnic that the society sponsored a few weeks ago, and I was able to talk to some other alumni at the picnic from the 50s, probably some of them that you may have known. And obviously they had mentioned that they started at the barracks.
That's correct.
Apparently the high school wasn't ready. So, you know, what was your reaction when you were told you were going to be doing classes at the barracks?
You know, I don't think I had any particular reaction, because it was all new to me at that time, and it was really only later in the summer, closer to the beginning of school, that I found out, well, the school is not ready yet. What are they going to do with us? Well, until we actually began the school year, I didn't have any idea where we were going to go, so it was all new to me, and reaction was fine, because I wasn't going to have to go back to Petersburg for another year. So I was game for anything at that point.
Being in the barracks, you know, I have no idea what the barracks looked like or what they were like inside. Just like another classroom, basically?
You know, the old army barracks were just big buildings with large rooms that would have originally been filled with cots for soldiers. And they were brick buildings, two-story brick buildings, and so they were able to convert some of the rooms into classrooms. And so they were just pretty much open rooms with desks in them. And they didn't have any of the other kinds of things that we're used to having today, like air conditioning or real good lighting or anything like that. As a matter of fact, something that was very interesting, had no setup for a bell system.
Oh, wow.
To end and start classes. And there was a teacher by the name of Francis Williams, who was an English teacher. And to this day, I can remember that when students were out of the building for whatever, you know, recess or whatever, lunch, he would hang out the window with a handbell.
Oh, wow.
And ring the bell. And that's how the students knew it was time to come in. So, and that lasted only one semester, from the fall, for the fall semester. And when we broke for Christmas, when we came back after the Christmas vacation, we came back to the new building.
Okay, that's a good segue. Tell me what that was like. What was the first day like when you go into this brand new building?
You know, I guess it's like entering any place that you're not familiar with, you just look at what's there, and I'll never forget walking into the building and looking down that hallway, and I thought it must be half mile down that hallway, and so you were so busy getting acquainted with people, because I came from Petersburg, but of course, there were students coming from College View and Fort Logan areas, so everybody pretty well was getting acquainted with everybody else. So there was a lot going on, and it was an enjoyable time because it was new, and everything was kind of exciting. So, and I was a young fellow, young kid.
I know that the Union High School was built in parts. And they had obviously finished the East Wing, and from what I heard from other alumni, the West Wing wasn't finished until later.
That is correct. It was not.
So were you guys served lunch?
We had lunch. There was at the west end of the gymnasium, which had been built, was a cafeteria area and a kitchen area. And so they did serve lunch out of that, and we ate at tables in the gymnasium. And that went on for, I don't remember how long, but they had not done anything in remodeling beyond that while I was in the school. So it had to have happened later in the 50s that they built the West Wing.
Okay.
and connected it with a hallway. So
that makes sense. As near as I can tell, it was probably the year after you graduated in 54, somewhere 54 to 55, that the West Wing was added.
And that could very well be,
okay,
yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, another one of the alumni was telling me about that. Do you know when the lower campus was built, the area that we're in right now? Obviously, that wasn't built early on.
No, it was not. We did not have any football field.
I knew that. I heard that.
Yeah. No, we were a traveling team. And I think this probably was built somewhere, again, between 55 and, I'm going to say, 57, 58, somewhere in there. Because by the end of the 50s, they were playing football on the football field down here. So.
Right. I had heard that, you know, they were practicing like over at the parade grounds?
Yes.
Over at Fort Logan?
Yeah, that's where we practice.
Okay. Do you play any games over there or just practice there?
No, just practice.
And then all your games were away?
That is correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
That had to be a little different.
And what was interesting is that we had to, the Fort Logan area was still under federal control at that time. And access was limited and controlled by guards. So whenever, during that first semester when we were attending school, we had to get on a bus at one of the two gates, north or the east gate, and that bus would carry us into the school. And then at the end of the day, the bus would take you back out to the gate again, because it was limited access. You couldn't come in on your own. And that was true for our football practices. We rode on a bus two or three.
Wow. Petersburg's a long way from where the Union High School was. That's a pretty good walk. Did you walk it? Or?
No. They had a bus that ran, and I, for the 2 years I was there, I had a good friend who was older and had a car.
Ah.
And I made arrangements with him, and he would pick me up in the morning. And then usually since most of the time we had practice, you know, football or whatever practice after school, and so on a case like that, I would either ride the bus home if we didn't practice, and again, friends on the team that I played for had cars. And I was too young to have a car.
Yeah.
Didn't have any money either, so.
I can relate that only too well. I know, and I've actually seen an aerial photograph of this whole area where the high school is. It was an aerial photograph taken of the military of Fort Logan.
Yes.
And you can actually see the open ground before the school was built. And you can see the gully coming from Fort Logan down east towards the river. And that basically the football field, as we know it, is dug out. It's a bowl. So obviously they went through the work to dig that out and put the field in. I take it that happened while you were gone.
That happened during the interim when I was not here. Okay. So, but as I say, towards the end of the 50s, my brother was attending school here. And I would come back and watch him playing games. And, of course, I knew all the coaches. And they would ask me during football season what I would do, you know, help with the games. And so I'd run the equipment up and down the sideline, just in, you know, down markers and all that kind of stuff. So I knew that the field was in operation at that point. And it was a nice situation because of the fact it was a bowl. And to my knowledge, at that time, it was the only field in the Denver metro area that was a bowl. And it was very popular. And there were numerous requests from outside groups wanting to use the field because of that. So,
oh, that's very interesting.
Yes.
I think that happened even up to my time. I can remember a lot of groups wanting to rent
yes.
the field.
Yeah.
So obviously we talked about the football. Other sports that the high school had while you were in high school?
Yeah, we had basketball. We had track. Did we have track? No, I'm sorry. Track didn't start till later. But we had basketball. We had baseball.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were the girls playing sports?
Girls were not playing sports. Girls were playing in basketball. They would play a type of basketball where the girls would have half the team on one end of the court and the other half, and they could only take the ball to half court and then they'd have to pass it. And that was sort of an intramural kind of thing. There were no outside sports for girls where they were participating with other teams.
That makes sense. I think a lot of that came in the 70s with Title IX.
So. Yeah, yeah. And at some point, they did develop a track and a cross-country team.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, it won a state championship in cross-country. Later would win a state championship in track. But in the earlier days, Bob Webb, an old-time teacher and resident of Sheridan, was the coach, and they got a trophy for cross-country. So,
I've seen that. Yes. So, where were your graduation ceremonies held?
In the gymnasium, on the stage. Audience was seated out on the floor, and then we were up on the stage.
That's interesting. I know in my class, which was the class of 73, we've just gotten into the new building our senior year, and we had our graduation in the gymnasium.
In the gymnasium. Yeah, yeah. I don't know when they started the graduations outside. As I recall, when I came back to the high school as a teacher in 61, they were still doing the graduations in the gym, and at some point they went ahead and set it up, and I don't know whether they had been discouraged by bad weather or what, but then they eventually started doing it down there on a regular basis, and it was only on rare occasions that they would have to bring it up, put it in the gym. And at that time, early on, the graduation classes were small enough they could do that, but then pretty soon it got to the point they couldn't do that anymore, so they began doing some things up at I call Loretta Heights.
But, right. Most people remember that as Loretta Heights.
So. Yeah.
What would you say was your most memorable experience at the high school? What really sticks out in your mind?
Wow. You know, Roland, as I say, the excitement of coming from a situation that I was in, which was, you know, basically, it was kind of like I was an elementary student through the first 10 years of my educational experience. And then suddenly I was in a situation when I was in the building where we could do a lot of moving around. And so everything was kind of new and exciting. I had a lot of great experiences. And I look back now, of course, my time in athletics, that was super. But I remember going out for the plays, stage plays, that were followed in my last 2 years that I was here and participating in those. And that was always a fun, interesting thing that I thoroughly enjoyed doing. So that would be one of the big ones.
Interesting. Thank you. Any classmates that bring out memories of me? Characters that really stick out that you went to school with?
Oh, yeah. You know, there were a lot of those. I had two good friends. One came from two of them, both of them came from College U, so I didn't meet them until we got down here, and we were kind of buddies through the 2 years. So I have, you said earlier my memory is good. Well, my memory, when it goes back to trying to put faces with names, sometimes doesn't work very well. But we did have one fellow who was in the plays. Now, he always played a part because he was very outgoing, very animated in everything he did. And so he was kind of a character, but he was a neat guy. His first name was Tom, and his last name will come to me, I'm sure, a half hour after we get done here. But yeah, there was a lot, and there were a lot of I can't remember a situation, but we were practicing over at Fort Logan on their field over there. At there were guys that were already the, reached the point where they were smoking cigarettes. And of course, if they got caught in those days, you got caught smoking a cigarette, that was it, you were done. And I can remember every now and then you would look over and you could look in a, one of the behind one of the trees or the bushes, or you'd see some smoke coming out, and then you knew that somebody had snuck off of having a cigarette over there. So,
Who is your most memorable teacher?
Most memorable? I would have to say probably a teacher by the name of Linus Davis. And that's because I had so many classes with him. He was a teacher of mathematics and science, which I was, all the courses I was taking, so I had him. But there were other teachers, the one I mentioned earlier that rang the bell. Frank Williams was a really top teacher, and he was the one that directed all the plays, so I would have to mention him as well.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Mr. Davis, obviously I didn't know as a teacher, is that the same Mr. Davis that lived on Hazel and was on the school board?
Exactly.
Same guy.
Same guy.
Excellent. Yeah. I do remember Mr. Williams very well because he was still at Sheridan when I was there.
When you were there. Okay.
And I remember very well, and he was the senior class sponsor and took us all the way through the graduation ceremonies and all that stuff and helped us through that whole process.
And you know, another teacher that you remember too was Mr. Parker.
Oh, everybody remembers.
Everybody remembers Mr. Parker. he was a super guy.
So he was there when you were there?
He was there. Not when I was in school,
but when you
but
came
when back. I came back, he was the science teacher. So
obviously, you graduated and you left, but then you did come back. What made you decide to come back to Sheridan and be a teacher?
Well, that was an interesting story. When I graduated from college, University of Denver, I had bachelor's degree in mathematics and science. And at that time, Denver Public School System was the first school system to get the opportunity to interview potential teachers coming down. So I got interviewed and they offered me a job at Gove Junior High on South Colorado Boulevard. It used to be up by Colfax. Teaching algebra at the ninth grade, and I had heard a lot of things about Gove that weren't too complimentary, so I kind of ignored that one. And so I started interviewing various districts, and I went to Jefferson School District and interviewed, and they offered me a job. I'll never forget, it was on a Friday, offered me a job to teach mathematics at Lakewood High School. And I verbally agreed that was something I'd like to do. And so they had actually given me some of the, it was close to the beginning of the school year, so they had given me a number of the textbooks to take home with me, study over the weekend, and I was to come back Monday and sign contract and all that. Well, that Saturday night, there was a basketball game at the high school here, and my brother played on the basketball team, so I came up to see the game. And as I was leaving, I ran into Tom Murphy, the old superintendent who'd been my superintendent. And he said, "Hey, Bond, I understand you're out of school." I said, "Yeah, I am." says, you want a job? And I said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to teach mathematics at the high school. And I said, well, I think maybe that's something that I'd consider. And I did, and decided I'd rather do that than go to Lakewood. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask about Mr. Murphy a little bit later, but there's a couple other questions I wanted to ask you before we got
okay.
back to Tom, because I think he's an amazing story unto himself.
He really was.
Yeah. How was the high school different when you came back from when you graduated?
From when I had gone, yeah. Well, of course, by that time they'd added the west part of it, and there were a lot of teachers I didn't know personally that were there, and so it was different because I was there in a different capacity. You know, I was one of the staff, and so in that sense I had to look at it a lot differently and act a lot differently too. You know, when I was there before, I was a kid, and looking at it through the eyes of a kid, doing things as kids do. But when I came back, now I was one of the adults and one of the staff that had to work with kids and discipline kids. And so, you know, it all changes. And fortunately, I had a good experience while I was at the University of Denver, and opportunities to do student teaching in places that really helped me. One of which was I had a great teacher that I student taught under at South High School in Denver. And he taught me a lot of ins and outs that really helped me with classroom discipline and control. And so, you know, I had that as a benefit when I started. So it was a new experience. But the first year of teaching, Roger, is for all teachers, is an interesting time because in most cases you don't have anything to fall back on. You got to create it as you go. Then after you get past the first year, then you know you got some stuff you can look back on and develop. But I had to develop all the stuff that I was going to use in the classes, and so that was kind of interesting. Some of it would work, some of it you'd find didn't work. So you had to make amendments as you went. But it was an exciting, fun year for me. Busy. Oh, busy, busy, busy.
I would imagine. You became the assistant principal later on.
I became the assistant principal in 1965. And as a matter of fact, at that time I was half-time assistant principal and half-time still teaching mathematics. And I was offered that, and I thought, well, man, that was kind of a different challenge. Maybe I'll try that and give it a try. I didn't know whether or not I'd go anywhere with it, but after the first year, it went pretty well, and so then they offered me a full-time assistant principal, which I was the following year, and that kind of headed me in a direction. So,
I know it's not one of the questions that I have on here, but tell me a little bit about Mr. Cusick. He was the principal. So.
Mr. Cusick was the principal. Let me kind of approach it in a little different way. There were teachers that were very popular with students. There were people who were coaches and administrators, one kind or another, that were popular with students. Then there were some that were not there for popularity reasons. They were there for business. Mr. Cusick was one of those. And I can remember a teacher especially. Her name was Aurelia Valley, taught English. That was very, very demanding. But the interesting thing was, she was not popular with the students at the time. But later on, when students had graduated and came back to school and wanted to visit, invariably the teacher they wanted to visit, if they had her, was Aurelia Valley, because they realized her tough and disciplined approach made them learn a lot, and helped them get where they were at. Well, Mr. Cusick was kind of like that way. He was very highly disciplined. You didn't vary from whatever the rules were. If you did, you paid the consequences. And it wasn't a situation where you were given two or three chances. If you didn't toe the line, he'd let you know about it and he'd deal with you. So he was a tough administrator. And as you could imagine, there were students that weren't too happy with that. The ones that were getting in trouble were really, really having to pay for it. But he was a good man, good administrator. Worked with his teachers the same way. Teachers realized they were there for a purpose, and so if they were to do something that had been required, they did it for the most part. If they didn't,
gone,
yeah.
After Sheridan Union became Sheridan High School, which was 1963, I'm going to kind of skip over that a little bit. But I wanted to ask you, there was a point in time before they built the new high school over on Oxford, split sessions.
Yes.
Okay. A couple of things happened with split sessions. One is you became principal of the junior high.
That's correct.
And then you had to deal with teaching kids in the afternoon for the junior high, and the high school kids were going to school in the morning. Tell me about split sessions from your perspective.
Split sessions is probably one of the most interesting periods of time that I was in education, because you had to do everything differently. High school went in the morning primarily because they had after-school activities, and so it was better to go to school in the morning and do practices and what have you in the afternoon. So the junior high school started around 12 o'clock, as I remember, and we went until, believe this or not, we went until about 4:45, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which was okay in early fall and late spring, but you can imagine what it was like during the course of the school year. Yeah. It was very dark on many days when students were excused from school, and I look back on that, and I kind of think about what the potential for some real problems and some serious kind of things would have been had they, because of the darkness when kids were getting out, and we were encouraging, we ran buses, of course, but we were encouraging students to get rides rather than walk home. But, you know, you had students walking down Federal Boulevard and elsewhere in the dark, and I always worried that something really serious might happen, but you know it never did.
Yeah,
we never had any hitches in that regard. Students adapted to coming in the afternoon. As a matter of fact, a lot of them liked it. Yeah. A lot of them liked this idea of sleeping in the morning and coming to school in the afternoon. Didn't care too much for the late excusal, but that was the way it was.
Yeah.
And so the thing was that's when we started, we thought, well, maybe that's something we'll do for a couple of years. Well, we ended up doing it for 5 years.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about it was the school district had promoted a bond issue to build a new high school in the fall of 1956, I believe it was, and it failed. And the reason for that was that the high school was getting to the point it couldn't handle all the students that were coming. They had to go somewhere. And the elementaries were having some difficulty, and so the approach was we need to break this up and only have half of the students in the building at one time and the other half the other. But I guess that stirred up the interest of the patrons of the community and school district to the point that when they floated the bond issue 5 years later, it passed, and they started building the high school around 1970, as I recall, and got it completed in 72. So we were on split sessions from 67 to 72.
And I remember. I was in all 5 years.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
You know, before we had talked about Mr. Murphy, and I've heard lots of stories about Mr. Murphy, and if there was ever a person that I'd like to go back in time and talk to, he would be it. Because it seemed to me that he did some amazing things and was very resourceful. First of all, can you tell me a little bit about him? I'm trying to find out him as a person.
Okay.
And I'm trying to do a separate story on him as the superintendent. Tell me, what do you know about him and his family, where he came from?
Tom Murphy had been in, if I remember correctly, he had been operating in a more rural area for a number of years. And I don't think I ever knew exactly how he got tied up with the school boards and became a superintendent of, actually he was superintendent and principal when it started.
Yeah.
And before they split off and he became superintendent and Carl Cusick became principal. But he was the kind of person, and evidently had done that in his previous employment, he was the kind of person that could take a situation and develop it however it needed to be developed. And that's what they needed with this. They wanted to pull school districts together who were also each having their own individual problems of where they were going to send their students when they had finished the grades that they had in the building. So that College U had that problem, Fort Logan had that problem. So it was pretty obvious they needed to do something about it, and that's where the concept of the Union High School came up. And he was the fellow that was given primary purpose of putting that together, which he did. And he was, as you remember him, he was a big old red-faced Irishman, 6'4", and had the kind of personality you would expect from somebody like that. He was tough. I don't want to say he was boisterous, but you never had any trouble hearing him. But he was fair. And it took a while to realize that that was the case, that he was, if you didn't do the right thing, he'd let you know about it. But he also would let you know when you were doing the right thing. And I remember a couple of situations with him. Carl Cusick had become principal, and they were dealing with a problem of students not getting to class on time. And so Mr. Cusick would get out in the hallway, and he'd patrol the hallways and watched when the bell rang that students were still getting to class, and so he would really get after the students and the teacher where they were supposed to be. And I'll never forget, I was teaching a geometry class, and it was right at the beginning of the class and students were coming in. And in those days, if students were tardy to class, you didn't accept them. You sent them to the office, and they had to get a tardy slip. And then all that was recorded. And if you got a certain number of them, then you spent time after school. You probably remember that. Of course, you maybe never did, but that's what they did. So anyhow, I was waiting for the students all to come in, and all of a sudden, Mr. Cusick burst in the door, and he started yelling at me. Why wasn't I sending the students that were coming in to the office to get a tardy slip? And I said, well, they're not tardy. And about the time I said that, the tardy bell rang. So anyhow, that kind of got stuck in my craw. And so later in the day when I had a break, I decided I was going to go talk to Mr. Cusick about that. And his office was here, and Tom Murphy's office was right here. So I went in and started talking to Carl Cusick, telling him the situation, told him that I was didn't appreciate, you know. Well, Tom Murphy heard me say that. And he said, what's going on? And so Carl and I sort of walked in and explained the situation to him. And so I don't know whether that had something to do with me later becoming assistant principal or not, but he realized that that I was correct in this particular case. And that's the way it was. He was fair. If he knew you were right, then he'd admit to it. And so he was doing things for the school district that I don't think people realized how important it was. One time, the school district was having trouble meeting the demands, the financial demands. And there was one year that I heard that he actually took out a second mortgage on his house to come up with enough money to pay teachers their December paychecks.
Wow.
And the reason he did that was the money had not come in from the county in time for that payment to be made. So he made those payments until the county money came in for the school. So it's just the fellow he was. He was for the school district, and since he'd put it together, it was his baby, so to speak. And
I heard some very interesting stories from some of the kids that were there after you were in high school, before you came back, talking about the digging out of the football field and getting fertilizer for the field, and him getting surplus dishes for the kitchen and things like that. It's just amazing. Was he in the service?
Not that I remember.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised. He probably was.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't recall ever talking to him about that. My guess is he was probably a little old for the service.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was he married?
He was married.
Do you recall his wife's name?
You know, I don't. I don't. Neat gal. I met her a couple of times.
If you do, let me know.
Yeah, but I don't remember. I'll ask my wife. She might remember.
Might remember.
Yeah, but no, he was a good man to work for, and good in the sense that you knew where you stood with him. And I couldn't say that was always the case in my educational experience. But he was kind of person that. If you did right, he'd let you know.
Right.
If you did wrong, he'd let you know too.
Yeah, I remember he stayed for 20 years.
Yeah.
He left just as the new high school was being finished.
That's correct.
And I think it was Mr. Davey came in after that.
That's right.
Must have been strange having a retirement situation like that and getting a new superintendent.
Yeah, it was, because their style was totally different. And we'd been with him. I'd been with him the entire time. Up to that point that I'd been with the school district. So I had to get used to the new superintendent. And another time that I remember with Tom Murphy, and you'll enjoy this, during split sessions. And we were meeting the month before. Students would be excused for the Christmas break. And we were talking, and I made a request at the meeting with Tom Murphy, and saying, would you give me permission to excuse the students a little bit early the day that we were breaking for the break? And he said, why? And I said, well, said it'd be nice to get the kids home while the sun was still shining and it wasn't dark. And he said, well, doesn't it get dark every day? And of course, you can imagine your buddy at the table collapsed, including me. But when it was all said and done, of course, he gave me permission to let the students get out early. But I'll never forget his response. Well, doesn't it get dark every day?
Anything else you'd like to tell me that we didn't cover?
Well, let me think. it was interesting to see how long it took people who had, and I don't mean just in our school district, but I mean other school districts that we played sports against, things like that, how long it took those people to quit calling Sheridan High School Sheridan Union. Because in their original memory,
yeah,
their contact with Sheridan Union High School. And I remember that so clearly that people would say, where are you at? I'm at Sheridan High School. Is that the Sheridan Union? You know, they'd always make reference to that, and I was really impressed with that. Union High School in the metro area was something rather unique.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't see Union High Schools, and if you did, they were probably out in a rural area somewhere. So it was interesting. That part I remember.
Actually, I can tell you quite a bit about that story because I've gotten into that quite a bit with some of the school research. I know that what happened was that Denver had annexed College View in basically the ordinance was February 1962, and that basically when Denver did that, they took basically a third of the student base and the supporting taxes out of the school district.
They did.
So that put the school district in a bind, and Fort Logan and Petersburg had to figure out what to do along with the Union District. And I know that there was an election in December of 62 that created the new Sheridan School District and basically dropped the Union. So basically the Union name, December 62, really 63 is when it technically went away.
Yeah.
But again, I go back and I think about that, and I think about Mr. Murphy and those school boards. And they had to be scrambling.
Yes.
Because they're, you know, you find out in February that you've just lost a third, and what do you do? And they have an election to decide it all before the end of the year. I mean, that's
yeah.
They've done a lot of stuff to figure out how to make it work.
People don't realize that the school district existed for a period of time, and the question was, could they continue to exist because of the financial demands and problems that they had? The blessing was this legislation you were alluded to. It was called the Poundstone Amendment, and that was the amendment to the Constitution that stopped Denver from annexing areas without people in the county that they were annexing had to vote for the annexation. So they had a say in whether they wanted to be in Denver or not, and that's what essentially put a stop to it. Most people don't realize, but the Sheridan Union School District extended as far north as Jewell back before Denver started all the annexations.
That's a long way. Yeah, that's a couple blocks north of Evans.
Yes.
So that's a long ways. And I guess it went from Santa Fe clear over to Sheridan Boulevard?
Yes, pretty much, except for the fact that you still had the it went there, but you had the cemetery that was there and all
right.
of that. But students in that area, yes, were in the school district early on. And then they started surrounding and cutting off, and that's when the Union District lost College View and became Sheridan High School.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Makes perfect sense.
It's
an amazing story. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Sure,
I definitely, if you could, anything else that you could find out on Mr. Murphy, his wife's name, if your wife would remember his name,
okay.
I would love to get that. I'm putting together some information. I'm pretty sure that he was in the military.
He may very well have been. In regard, you mentioned him getting dishes from... well, what they call them Army-Navy stores now, but yeah. In those days they were called differently, but he got a lot of stuff. He got a school bus through them. One of the school buses that we drove when I was there in first came there was still had its Army khaki color. I'll never forget it. A good friend, teacher Jim Dorsey, drove that bus. We drove buses early on, and you taught, and it was funny. You would pull your bus up to the drop-off point, and you'd drop the kids off, and you'd get off the bus, and you'd shut the door, and it had a padlock on it, you'd lock it. And then at the end of the day, you'd have to come back and unlock the, you know, and let the kids off. But he had a bus. He was getting stuff all the time from Army, Navy, or the surplus, as they called it in those days. And we got our first football equipment, as I remember, a lot of it came from the University of Denver. It was old stuff that they were not using. And it was an interesting time, Roger, because people, I don't think, realized excuse me.
Okay.
Let me look. Well, so anyhow, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Things that happened often happened because some pretty unique kinds of other things that were occurring to make it happen. And it was a school that was operating on the basis of make do, get by with the least that you could. And I don't think anybody really resented it. They just understood that was the way it was. And for most of us, the fact that we knew what the other alternative would have been, this was a good deal. So, for a long period of time during the 50s and the 60s, things that came into the school district came in because they were available through surplus.
Yeah, that's one of the things that struck me is his ability just to bring in resources. When there weren't resources here, he was able to go find them.
Yes.
And to me, that was just, that had to be a lot of work and a lot of ingenuity to go figure that out and to make it happen.
I'm sure it was. And, of course, Tom Murphy was all you had to do was mention his name, and everybody knew who Tom Murphy was. And he was highly respected by other school people, you know, outside of the district that he had worked with. And I think you're absolutely right. I think he did an awful lot of things that kept this school district glued together and operating.
Yeah.
And deserves probably a lot more praise than he did.
Well, I'm working on that story, and I'm doing stories on all the superintendents. Obviously, he's the most difficult. Because the time distance.
Yeah, yeah.
The newer ones, you can find a lot of information on them on the internet. Tom Murphy's not really on the internet.
Yeah.
You got to do the research the old-fashioned way.
Yes, you do.
So that's why I'm putting it together in bits and pieces. I can tell you the school district that he came from was the Frederick School
there
District.
There you go. Yeah.
Which is now part of, I guess. I want to say it's part of the Poudre District, or not Poudre, but one of the northern districts.
Adams County?
One of them.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a few different districts up there, and they've gone through some incredible consolidations up north, where Sheridan's been able to survive and not be eaten up by somebody else, which has always been a challenge.
That's where his association with Carl Cusick came from, because Carl came from that same general area.
Oh, okay.
Up there, and so he knew him, and brought him along, and so he was Carl was a teacher to begin with when the system started, but later on, as I say, Carl was made principal, and Tom just As we've discussed here this morning, you can see why he needed the time. He couldn't operate a building and do all the things that he was doing at the same time, I'm sure.
Makes sense. So,
yeah.
Well, Clark, I really so much appreciate your time.
Certainly.
And we'll let you know how this story turns out.
I would be interested. Yeah.
It's going to be a long story. There's a lot of gaps, and it's part of it. You know, this is a passion for me, being a Sheridan kid, K to 12, and other involvement that I've had in creating the schools committee as a part of the historical society. Originally, it was intended to be directed towards the high school, but Benita was Hutchison was saying, well, let's include all schools. And bless her heart, I thought it was a good idea because, you know, we're now, I've been concentrating on the high school for the last couple of years, and we're now getting ready to work on Alice Terry. And another person, I don't know if you remember her, Jeannie Fitzgerald, who's now Jeannie Behrens, she's leading that project for the Historical Society on Alice Terry.
Great.
So as we're doing the high school story, we're doing the Alice Terry story. Obviously, we've already got a lot on Fort Logan. We've got to go back in and fill from 1990 to basically the time it closed.
Yes.
And then we've got to go back and do some stuff with Orr Oliver, Maryville, which was a school that was in the district for, I think, 2 years.
Yeah, it was right up here on the hill.
Right up there on the hill and so forth. So it's when you look at the whole package, I think there's just some amazing stories. And there's some amazing stories at each of the schools.
Oh, there is. And the thing is that as each year goes by, and you alluded to this, the people that knew about it become less and less.
And less and less, yes.
Yeah. Well, you and I share one thing, and that, well, we almost share one thing. You mentioned K through 12. I wasn't K through 12. I was 1 through 12.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have kindergarten
back in the day.
So I find that interesting, Roger. I think there are more people than we know who are longtime Sheridan students, many, many of which did the same thing we did, started at the beginning and went all the way through. But I was always impressed when I was still in the business how many families would return to the school district that had left. They went somewhere else, and they would come back to the school district, and they'd say, boy, are we glad to be back. We liked the schools. We didn't like the schools where we were. And I think that's quite a compliment to
it is.
Any school district.
Yeah, lots of second-generation Sheridan kids. And even now, which is a little bit more spooky, is third-generation kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll never forget the time I was standing in the hallway. And a student came up to me and said, do you remember, I don't remember the name she gave me, but she said, do you remember and the name? And I said, well, yeah, I do. She said, well, she was a student here, and she's my grandma.
Wow.
And about that time, I started to wilt. Wasn't sure I'd be able to get back to my office. So realized that times had gone by.
Yeah,
so.
They have.
Well, Roger.
Thank you so much, Clark.
Enjoy it.
And I'll be in touch again. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Oh, I got to figure out how the gadget.
Well, I did away with that. I gave up on some of that a long time ago.
Yeah.